Retro.
Go.
Fido.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance, go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Greetings from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the June 17th, 2012 edition of Space Talk, live on the air right here on WMMB. Well, thanks for taking time to tune in on this Father's Day to join us for another hour of talking about the space program and not just our own nation's space program, but especially with the news from China this weekend, talking about what is going on in space around the world. In support of that theme, and to some extent coincidentally, my guest today in the studio is NASA's Gary Martin, who is here to tell us about the International Space University, which is underway right now here on Florida's Space Coast. Plus, your questions and comments about anything having to do with our space program are welcome, too, along the way. Please feel free to give us a call anytime during the program or send us an email. No question too dumb. No opinion not worthy of discussion. Our phone number is 768-1240. The area code is 321 if you need it. And our email address is spacetalking@AOL.com. Well, let's continue with today's edition of my weekly broadcast blog, Orbital Inclinations. I woke up Saturday morning to learn there were three new humans and one less reusable spaceship in Earth orbit. It's a day later, and I'm still not sure how I feel about all of this or what's really important to note about all of this. Saturday morning at 6:37 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, China launched its fourth manned mission into space atop a Long March rocket. The Shenzhou 9 spacecraft, which is based largely on the design of the Russian Soyuz spacecraft, carried two men and China's first female astronaut into orbit. Their 13-day mission is to dock with the prototype space station launched last year. Two of the crew members will work and live inside the Tiangong-1 space lab, while the third remains inside the Shenzhou spacecraft as a safety precaution. If all goes well, a required phrase in the space business, the mission will be a great achievement for China and mark an important milestone for their plans, which by all accounts target a manned landing on the moon by 2025 as one of their next big goals. Exactly when that will happen, of course, is still anybody's guess, not that we can put definite dates on any of our own plans to go back to the moon or onto Mars. China began its human spaceflight program about 20 years ago and launched its first man into space in 2003. A two-man mission then launched in 2005, and then a three-man mission that included China's first spacewalk launched in 2008. So I suppose in terms of a piloted docking with an orbiting spacecraft, you could say that it has taken China 20 years to do what we did in eight, if you start the clock ticking from the time NASA was formed in 1958 to the time of the Gemini 8 mission in 1966. Of course, it did take us 25 years to launch our first female into space. But to dismiss this Chinese spaceflight with a wave of a hand and a been there, done that attitude would be wrong, just as surely as it is wrong to dismiss with the same general argument the recent achievement by SpaceX at our own space station a couple of weeks ago. Yet in terms of China, here's where my mixed feelings come into play. Do I think that this is a remarkable achievement? Yes. Anyone that can do this, no matter where the expertise or designs originally came from, ought to be congratulated. Putting humans into orbit and safely returning them is still something that only three nations have done so far. Do I think that we should now open the hatches of the International Space Station and welcome the Chinese in with open arms? Well, not now, but I wouldn't say never. You know, it's not a matter of trusting their technology or even the specific people directly managing their space program. The fact remains that China is a communist nation with serious human rights issues, a still contentious position with regard to Taiwan and, for us, troubling relations with nations such as Iran and North Korea. Not that we don't have some of our own problems internationally. That said, do I think the Chinese people are very warm and friendly? Yes. In fact, the Chinese officials associated with their space program who I have met in my career were all very much so. We are all human. We all share this same planet, and we must find a way to live and work together in peace. Nevertheless, for now, I remain suspicious and mistrustful of the Chinese government, and I am concerned that these very peaceful achievements in space by China could turn into a threat to our national security and to our national pride. I'm not sure if this is politically correct or not. It may not even be very Christian of me, but simply put, I do not want to see the next human footprints on the moon being made by a boot stamped made in China. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean I'm advocating another Cold War space race to the moon, but I do believe the folks in Washington, D.C. need to pay a little more attention to what China is doing in space and, in response, take bolder steps in terms of improved space policy, technology investment, and education to ensure there is never a threat from China to our national security or our national pride. Perhaps one part of a proper response to China's space efforts took place barely 2 hours after the Long March rocket blasted off from the Chuchuan Satellite Launch Center. Also on Saturday at 8:48 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, the Air Force's winged X-37B reusable space plane returned to Earth after a 468-day space flight, touching down on the long runway at Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. Launched atop an Atlas V rocket from Cape Canaveral Air Force Station in March of 2011, this orbital test vehicle is the second of at least two that we know about that Boeing has built for the Air Force. OTV-1 flew in 2010 and is slated to return to space atop another Atlas V as early as this October. Now, there are still a lot of things we don't know about this program. We don't know what it did up there for 15 months. We don't know if there were any problems during the flight. We don't know how much the flight cost or how much has been spent in total on the program since it was begun by NASA in 1999 and then turned over to the military in 2004. But we do know it did return to Earth without incident on Saturday and looked great in pictures that were posted on the internet. So the big question you may be wondering today is if the X-37B represents a capability that means anything for NASA in terms of its future space transportation plans, including the reliance on commercial providers for cargo delivery and astronaut taxi service to the International Space Station. My answer is that I don't think it should mean anything to NASA and our commercial space programs right now. The X-37B is not a big spaceship. It can't carry much into space, and it may be too expensive to maintain and operate outside a military budget. But with the Chinese making advances in space that have implications for our national security and our national ego, I'm glad the X-37B is reminding the world in yet another way that our space program has not shut down. We're still trying out new things, and our nation's spaceports remain open for business. And that's this week's Orbital Inclinations. As we do head now into our first break, I invite you to stick around as we begin our conversation with Gary Martin on the topic of space education, the International Space University, and why that's important right now to all of us along Florida's space coast. And a little bit later, we'll preview this week's planned launch of an Atlas V rocket from Cape Canaveral Air Force Station, which just this morning was delayed from Monday to Wednesday due to a problem with its mobile launcher. We'll talk about all that a little bit later. Don't forget, the phone lines are open for any of your questions or comments about our space program. Give us a call at 321-768-1240 or send an email to spacetalking@aol.com. Now, please stay tuned. I'm Jim Banky. Hey, and you're listening to Space Talk live right here on WMMB.
If you missed part of the show, catch the podcast, Space Talk, in the on-demand section at WMMBAM.com.
If it's happening in space, Jim Behnke is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
And welcome back to Space Talk, everyone. 321-768-1240 is the number to call to participate in the program today. You can also send us an email with your questions or comments to spacetalking@aol.com. Well, my guest is in the studio today. It's Gary Martin. Officially, he is the new Ventures and Communications Director at NASA's Ames Research Center in California, but he's here today as the NASA guy on the scene for the International Space University taking place here on the Space Coast. And as we learn more about him and the International Space University, which we will hereon after refer to as the ISU, I think you'll see that once again we won't have time to cover everything we'd like to do in one edition of Space Talk. Gary, welcome to the program today.
I'm really happy to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here, and you've got such a great background. I want to spend a little time telling folks about you. You've done a lot of neat things. Tell us a little bit about your background, how you kind of got from where you started to where you are today.
Let's see. Well, actually, I started out as an anthropologist, which has actually helped me in my career quite a bit. But I went back to school when I was 27 and got a degree in physics and mathematics.
Yeah.
And then I was lucky enough to do an internship at the Goddard Institute of Space Studies in Manhattan.
Okay.
And I learned that being around NASA people was just a lot of fun. They're very energized. They're working on really cool things, things that have never been done by humans before. And I said, boy, that's what I want to do.
Yeah, so, yeah.
So for my master's, actually, George Washington University had a master's that they taught at the NASA Langley Center.
Okay.
So I did that, and I was lucky enough to be in a great niche. It was a time when they were designing the space station.
Right.
And they needed someone in Washington who understood how to make very quiet space vehicles.
And okay.
Because the station was going to do microgravity experiments and still does.
So quiet not in the sense of noise, but quiet in the sense of vibration.
Vibration and noise.
And interference to something that's
interference.
Sensitive.
And so you could do these very, very cool experiments that you can only do in space.
Right.
And so they hired me at NASA headquarters right out of school. And I've been working in Washington, I've been working at Goddard, and now I'm working at Ames, and they're all great centers.
And they're all great. One of your interesting points in your career, which I was involved a little bit early on, back in the time when the vision for space exploration was being announced, and that you had the interesting job and the only one ever of the word space architect. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Well, actually, the term space architect was being used by the Pentagon at the time, and so we took it, and they had had one for some years. And so I was very lucky. It was the amazing part of my career where we were actually doing studies starting in 99 and then showing how you could work science and human exploration together and that you could make technology investments like in nuclear propulsion, for instance, for science that could someday be used for humans that would go to the moon and Mars.
This multidisciplinary thing is interesting because we get into the ISU conversation a little bit. The idea that just kind of bureaucratically, we fund space science, and they do their own thing over here, and then you fund human spaceflight, and they do their own thing over here, and every once in a while they have to meet at the launch pad, and it gets a little contentious sometimes. But you were able to look at it from the idea that how do we all work is basically one big happy family. No mean task coming out of NASA headquarters.
It was no mean task. It was actually really fascinating. We had a great group. We had people from all over NASA. We weren't allowed to talk about it when we were doing the studies because we were trying to get the information enough that we could start funding technologies. And we did start some new technology funding in in-space propulsion and learning about the radiation issues with humans.
Mm-hmm.
And so actually when you get the scientists and the human space group engineers together, you find that they do like working together.
Mm-hmm.
But it's when you get to the area of budget.
Right.
You know, there's only a certain amount. The pie is only so large. And so there is competition for the funds. So by actually making a plan where you help the science and help the humans at the same time with new technology, it really came across well. And that became the vision for space exploration that George Bush announced in January of 2004.
Which going back, which on the surface, and of course we could do a whole 3 hours on just kind of what happened to the Vision and Constellation and all the issues there, still a really, really hard thing to talk about in the space community. A lot of hot tempers and opinions still persist after all these years. But the idea of wrapping up shuttle, getting onto something new, continuing to use the space station, going back to the moon, onto Mars, you know, how many space studies have been done over the years sitting on all of our shelves, volumes of stuff written that basically say the exact same thing? Isn't this a no-brainer?
Well, that actually, our Administrator O'Keefe, when he came in, basically said something similar to that. But the idea, in fact, I wasn't allowed to I was ahead of all human advanced programs for, you know, looking at suits and things to go farther in space. And so I wasn't allowed to show people on the moon or show what we might do on Mars visually or even talk about it. And when the new administrator, when O'Keefe came in, Sean O'Keefe, I went to him and said, here's our program. Here are the things we've been working on. May I show people on the moon and people on Mars? And he said, well, what? Why not? But the previous administration had...
Yes, yeah. They did. And it was an amazing time down here because we were all talking about going to Mars and going back. We were all so excited, but we couldn't say the words, you know, and it just didn't make any sense for so many reasons. Well, anyway, so all these years later, now your career has gone in a couple of different ways. You spent some time with the International Space University. You kind of went back to NASA Ames. And I want you to talk a little bit about your role at Ames right now. Dealing with these new ventures in communications, what's that all about?
Well, so I've been very fortunate in my career to have very cool jobs. And when I came back from the International Space University, I had a number of offers at different places. And Pete Warden, who had just become the center director at Ames, asked me if I would come out there and help him bring more innovation into the center and do things with public-private partnerships that hadn't been done right there in Silicon Valley. So I couldn't turn it down.
And among those things, now I know we were talking earlier about communications and some of the work that I do with NASA Aeronautics, some that we share some similar contacts and friends and associates, all this stuff building toward a very interesting topic here when we get to the ISU. But I do want to I have to take a moment, and in relation to your work out at Ames, talk about Nancy Conrad, the wife of Pete Conrad, Apollo 12 astronaut, Skylab astronaut, and the Spirit of Innovation Awards. This is an incredibly great program, an incredibly great thing that is just so inspirational. Tell us a little bit more about it.
Well, I had met Nancy while I was a space architect, and then one day she comes to Ames, and she started talking about this new program she was starting, the Spirit of Innovation. As soon as I heard it, it's a high school program where different teams from all around the actually from all around the world now, we have international teams. They compete on innovative subjects like on space and on energy and things that are affecting people all around the world. And the high school students come up with products that will help some way, like a nutrition in space as one and some energy approaches. But how you cook out in the desert with no, you know.
Yeah,
really
my mind
cool
is, I've read them all, and my mind, of course, blanks right now on what some specific examples are. But some of these ideas blow your mind.
And the kids are so great. And so Nancy has organized this all. We have, every year, we have the final culmination of the competition at Ames, and they get to come to the Space Center, and we have a lot of people coming from all over NASA that participate. And a lot of entrepreneurs from Silicon Valley talk to the students about what you can do and give them confidence to go out and do innovative things in their lives. So it's touching a lot of students. It's an amazing concept. And Nancy has really started single-handedly putting that together. Now it's actually getting to a point where it's very successful.
Yeah, and she is a personality not to be trifled with at all.
That's absolutely true.
Well, and Gary, we're talking about all these things, and I want to lay this foundation about your background because it just so perfectly sets up the International Space University, certainly why you're involved with it and what you're doing with it. So with about a minute or so before we take our bottom of the hour break, give us the high-level overview and introduction to what is the International Space University.
The International, it's our 25th year, and it was, I guess the best thing to say is it was started by very young people who wanted to put a beacon out and say, I want to find similar people who love space from all over the world. and that I want to get together with them so that we can collaborate in the future and we can open this great frontier.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have been extremely successful. We have people from 31 countries this year. Our average age is about 31. We have senior managers and people coming just out of their first studies at the university. And we get this great mix of people who all have one passion. They want to open up the frontier. They want to do business in space. They want to go to space themselves. We've had astronauts come through the course. We've had 3,300 alumni.
Mm.
And the key phrase at ISU is international, intercultural, and interdisciplinary.
Wow. So there's a lot more to unpack here as we continue to talk about ISU and how the public can plug into with a couple opportunities here happening on our space coast. Everyone, we're going to stand by now. Gary, we'll pause for our usual five-minute built-in hold at the bottom of the hour. We'll take a break, get you caught up on the latest news, weather, and sports. And then when we return, we'll continue our discussion about the International Space University. Also coming up, our preview of the Atlas V rocket set to fly Wednesday morning now. Meanwhile, 321-768-1240, the number to call. I'm Jim Bank. You're listening to Space Talk on WMMB.
Space Talk is back in a minute. Call Jim now at 768-1240. And now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
And indeed, welcome back to our second half of Space Talk on WMMB. Our phone lines and online inbox are open for your questions or comments. The phone number 321-768-1240. The email address is spacetalking@aol.com. And with thanks to my own father in the email inbox today, he just wished me a happy Father's Day. Well, right back at you. Gary Martin from the International Space University is with us today talking about ISU on the Space Coast. We kind of got the high-level introduction before the break. And, Gary, I'm just wondering if you could be a little more specific now on ISU because, you know, when I first read about this happening and understood it was happening here, I really didn't understand what it was. I didn't understand, was this a class? Was this a program? Was this something just, you know, students can go to? I mean, I really didn't understand what physically was happening here. Could you talk about what's actually happening here?
I will. So it is it's a premier program that's 25 years old, and it gets held in a different country and a different city every year. And so we have been in China and in Europe and South America and Australia. So each year we make a program where there are multidisciplinary core lectures that are taught, where the team or the participants actually work together on a team project over the 9-week course. And they each actually, we like the engineers, most this year are engineers, like over 50%. But we do have lawyers, we have artists, we have people who just love space. We have life scientists, and it's this beacon. They all come, they hear about this amazing course, and they meet people who have had it, because many people say it's changed their life because it really gets them focused in space. And so they do different disciplines also during the course. And so it takes 9 weeks, and we have about 120 to 150 lectures come in.
Okay.
And these are people who are actually doing space all around the world, CEOs of businesses and heads of agencies. And they come in because they want to hopefully have people come back and work for them.
Right, right. So the Space Studies program, so here in the Space Coast, so a typical day, I guess you don't call them a student, you call them a participant. Would wake up here in a hotel or something, if they're out of town, or at a dorm in
the
FIT or something,
FIT.
Florida Tech. How are the dorms? Are you in the
Actually,
dorm?
Actually, they're excellent, and I'm in the dorm there. And Florida Institute of Technology is an amazing place. It is a great facility. The lecture halls are amazing. The cafeteria is amazing. And the dorms, we've had, you know, this is my fourth time of doing it. I've never had such a happy group of participants.
Really? Oh,
yeah.
That's great. By the way, you didn't know that I'm an Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University graduate, and so we appreciate Florida Tech, but they have a lousy flight team. Go Eagles. So,
and Kennedy is also one of the partners.
And Kennedy's a big deal. But again, going back to what their typical day is, so they're getting up and they're attending lectures. They're going on tours. They're involved in projects.
So, like, for instance, during the first part of the program, the first 4 weeks, every morning they get up and they have at least three lectures from a person who's actually working in those areas and has sometimes created the policies they're talking about and things like that. Then we have a hands-on in the afternoon. They either start their team projects or they do a workshop and things they've never done before. And then at night we have optional lectures where people who are passing through, NASA managers or managers from ESA or our business want to talk to them and meet them, the participants. We have 127 this year because it's such a premier program.
Right.
And so we make arrangements, and sometimes it's really hard on the participants because they have so many
and choices to make, multiple tracks, if you will.
Yes. The complaint we get is that it's too rich of a program.
Too rich of a program. Too much
to
do.
And I said, well, that's a great, great
pick. Well, and so that's an interesting point. And I've been in the market now. I have my bachelor's degree. I'm in the market for a master's degree. I've been looking real hard at doing a space education thing up in Embry-Riddle, my alma mater. And I look at ISU and I look at the Space Studies program and I think, well, this looks interesting to me. But I wasn't sure what I get out of it at the end. Am I getting a certificate? Do I get a degree? Am I just that much smarter and more in tune with what is going on in space? All of the above.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. So ISU has a number of different programs. And one of their programs is a master's program. It's a one-year master's that's highly sought after. In fact, the last module of the master's program is a placement for an internship. For instance, I have 13 of them at Ames right now.
Oh, do you?
Because we really try to keep the best and brightest.
Sure, and sure. So, and you got first choice of the pick,
we get first
right?
choice because I go over there in January and interview people. But the main thing there is that program is all in Strasbourg. It's very nice except for the internship.
Right.
And then we have executive space courses. If you're interested, it's 1 week. Where maybe someone just joined Boeing or or Lockheed Martin, and they want to bring them up to speed really quick. So they come to this 1 week course that we have at different times of the year, and then they learn all the main things that are going in space around the world. It's very international.
So am I getting a certificate? Am I just putting it on my resume, or is it a diploma? Or?
So you get a certificate that we're not accredited in the U.S.
For the space studies program.
For the space studies program. And so what they do is if you take the 9-week course, then you do not need to take the first module of the master's.
Okay. So to review,
yes,
as we talk academically.
Yes.
The International Space University is an organization that does a number of things, and it has a master's degree program in Strasbourg. One of the programs that it does is a space studies program. So like any school would have a number of different things you could do. You could actually take the degree, or maybe it's like a 9-week summer, not necessarily a course, but a 9-week program.
Right.
So the space studies program is the part of ISU that goes around from venue to venue every year. Interesting places, as you've mentioned already, and we're at KSC this year. And so these folks come. Now, my next question then is, who are these – I keep wanting to say students because we think of it as a university. Who are these participants? From the perspective, Gary, of, I'm a guy with a business degree. I can understand just enough rocket science to get me in trouble and maybe explain it to mom and dad. But I don't need to be an engineer. I don't need to have passed calculus to take, space studies programming. I don't want to ask it this way. How smart do you have to be a part of this thing? But kind of what kind of backgrounds? You mentioned artists earlier. They don't know engineering necessarily.
Right.
Who are these kids?
You just have to have a passion for space.
Okay.
And then you need either a sponsorship or some funds to put you in the program. But we have people from 31 countries. The average age is, like I said earlier, 31 also. But we have some people who are in their 50s. We have some people who are 21. Most are men this year.
Yeah.
We try to get a nice mix, but for some reason this year it's mostly men. Most have, you have to have your bachelor's.
Okay, that's kind of what I was wondering,
you
too,
to
academically, where are we at?
And then we have mostly master's and PhDs and a couple postdocs. But, for instance, people who have just gotten their bachelor's is about 45%.
Oh, okay.
And then most people have worked, it's like an MBA. Most people have worked over 3 years, not necessarily in space, but they've worked in their companies. It depends on what country you're from, kind of tells you a little bit about the kind of people they send. Like the Chinese who are here, we have 14 participants from China. They're mostly mid-level to high-level managers at CASC.
Okay.
And in India, we have five students from Israel and the Indian Space Organization, and they are mostly mid-level and high-level managers. Where a lot of the Europeans and Canadians and U.S. are on the younger side, but not necessarily.
Really? So this really tells you that this truly is an international university. And I know the program and the ISU in general has these three I's that they refer to. And the idea that these folks are coming together and learn to work together has got to be a great – I mean, it just bodes well for the future of our world space program.
They learn real-life lessons. For instance, the team project is where they learn most of those. They have to be self-organizing.
Mm-hmm.
We have sponsors, sometimes from the space agencies, that actually would like to have a product about, you know, like this year we're doing one on spaceports. We're doing one on space stations.
Makes sense.
Yeah. We're doing one on debris.
Really? Okay. Yeah, that's good.
And one on STEM education.
And science, technology, engineering and math or whatever.
Yes.
STEM was a Minnesota acronym that came up. I'm born and raised Minnesota. Yeah, it's a little trivia thing. I can't stand STEM, by the way. It's a great idea, but everyone goes out of the way to say STEM, and it just kind of gets me a little annoyed after a while. But anyway.
Our lead for that is Guy Boy, and he's thinking about trying to change it to STEAM.
STEAM?
And add art in there, too.
Oh, see, now that I could hang my hat on. STEAM sounds a lot more better than STEM. Well, that's great. So again, these folks are coming together internationally. They work together. They do these projects. And then, of course, we hope that they go back into the mainstream workforce, apply those lessons, and again, find out ways for all of us to work together.
Well, actually, this is how I found out about ISU. When I was a space architect, I had someone on my staff who was an alumni from ISU. And, of course, we were looking at how to cooperate as part of this, of going to the moon and Mars. He could get so much information so quickly. One day I asked him how he did it, and he said he just called his other alumnus from around the world who are now working in ESA and working at JAXA, and he could get, you know, what their latest plans were and for their advanced technology. And so it really did pan out, and that's where I learned. And then finally, I actually funded one of their team projects when they did it in Australia on the moon.
Oh, yeah.
And we used that later when we put forth the new plans.
Oh, that's incredible. You know, and again, that's where the future is at. We're going to go to Mars someday. We got to figure out how to do this as one planet. Well, anyway, hey, Gary, stand by. We're going to take our final break of the day. When we come back, we will wrap up our discussions for this week about the International Space University. Hey, plus, we're going to take a look at the local launch forecast, update you on now Wednesday's planned launch of an Atlas V. I'm Jim Banky. You're listening to Space Talk right here on WMMB.
If you missed part of the show, catch the podcast, Space Talk, in the on-demand section at WMMBAM.com. Listen to Space Talk on the web at WMMBAM.com.
And again, welcome back as we do begin our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk, with the reminder that you can stay in touch with us throughout the week. If you're on Facebook, search for Space Talk. If you're on Twitter, just look up Space Talking. And as just mentioned, for one-stop shopping, visit WMMBAM.com, keywords Space Talk, for everything you need to know. And as we do continue along with the program today, let's take a moment for our weekly look at the local launch forecast. Well, just this morning, we got the news that our next launch from the Space Coast was delayed from Monday to Wednesday because of a problem with an airflow duct on the Atlas V's mobile launch platform. That means that the Atlas V rocket is now set to blast off from Launch Complex 41 at Cape Canaveral Air Force Station on Wednesday morning, at least no earlier than. Launch time, we think, will be 8:28 a.m. Eastern Daylight. The official launch time has not been announced just quite yet. It will be here in the next probably a few hours, we hope. When it does fly, the booster is going to carry a classified payload for the National Reconnaissance Office, which is why they are being so secretive with the launch time until we get a little closer to liftoff. And we don't have a new weather forecast yet either, but based on the extended outlook given in the most recent launch weather forecast and checking the national weather maps myself, if I do say so, I think the odds will be in our favor for good conditions during what is still probably going to be about a one-hour launch window, maybe about 59 minutes. We will have live coverage of the launch here on WMMB during the Bill Mick Live program, beginning just a few minutes before liftoff. If there are any changes to the launch time as the countdown progresses Wednesday morning, we'll be sure to pass that information along to Bill to share on the air with everyone. Of course, you can also listen to streaming audio on the web at WMMBAM.com or on your mobile device via iHeartRadio. So once again, the next launch is an Atlas V lifting off no earlier than Wednesday morning, probably at 8:28 a.m. Again, for more information about this and all the various launches scheduled around the world, jump on the web to WMMBAM.com, keywords space talk, and look for the link on the left side to our launch forecast. By the way, once this one gets off the ground, we still hope to have a Delta IV Heavy fly before the end of the month, right now targeted for June 28th. And as I say all the time, that rocket is beautiful to watch, but it still scares me half to death. It is one monster of a rocket. Gary Martin from the International Space University, actually from NASA, working for the International Space University as what, Gary?
I'm the program director.
The program director, not so sexy of a term as like embed or anything like that,
no,
you know?
Just the director.
Well, ISU is happening here at Kennedy and on the Space Coast, and I want to take a moment to just stress here in the minutes we have remaining the fact that it is happening here locally and how much support you're getting from our local space community and academic community via Florida Tech for what's happening here. This is a big thing in the space community and a big chance for Kennedy and the Space Coast to shine. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, we've gotten great support from NASA Kennedy and from FIT. I mean, at the opening, we had Laurie Garver, who's the deputy administrator from Washington, come down, and Bob Cabana, who's the center director at KSC, were there at the opening ceremony. And FIT, the president of FIT, was there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a really great ceremony. It showed a lot of support from business. We also had Boeing, one of our sponsors this year, was there. And so we had it was a great ceremony. One of the things, though, I do want to tell people who are out there is that they should, if you want to learn more about ISU, go to isunet.edu.
Right.
And on there, you can see some of our public events that we're having this summer. For instance, we're going to have a TEDx event on July 6th at FIT.
Okay.
And it's free. It's in the morning, and all you need to do is to register.
So can you do that at isunet.edu? Or is there a number to call or something like that?
You can do that through that site. I'll make sure that that's all set up.
Okay.
And then we have an astronaut panel at the all Kennedy right. Center at the visitor complex.
At the visitor complex,
on
sure.
July 11th.
Okay.
And it's going to be a great panel that's led by Bob Cabana
sure.
himself. So that's going to be really interesting.
These Meet the Astronaut panels we have in our community every once in a while are great opportunities for kids to come out. You know, do you have a time on that, by the way?
So it's going to be at night at 8 o'clock.
At 8 o'clock. So everyone get off work, get the kids, and they don't have to go to school the next morning. They can stay up late, go out to the visitor complex and see this. These are tremendous events for you to get up close and personal with an astronaut.
And that's July 11th.
Okay.
And then we have another one, Space and Media Panel on June 26th.
Okay.
And so that's going to be here at FIT in the Gleason Performing Arts Center.
Okay.
And that, again, that begins at 8 o'clock also at night.
Oh, at 8 o'clock. Okay.
And no registration needed. You just need to come
just
over.
Just show up. Yeah. So space media, that means we can all go yell at our favorite news reporters. And
that's right.
Why do you not write about space the right way? Lord knows I've had that happen to me a few times in my career.
If you just said it right, then everyone would support it.
Yeah, we just said it right. That's a big if. That's a huge if. One of the things I want to ask about what's happening at Kennedy, again, we've got about a minute left. What are these folks getting a chance to tour and see the facilities and get out to the launch pad?
In the different departments and the team projects, they get a lot of information. For instance, our spaceports has been up there. They're looking at how does Kennedy work and trying to figure out what we'll do in the future. What is the future of spaceports?
Sure.
We'll have a tour of Kennedy in the future, and we do plan to go to the launch on Wednesday morning.
Then what a great chance. I mean, you know, that's why you come here. You got to see a launch, you know. And I bet for some of these folks, they probably never have seen one.
Yeah, it's a chance in a lifetime.
Get
They're
up and
so
close.
Excited about it.
And get their clothes to vibrate and all that. Should be really cool.
It's
so,
going to be great.
Gary, thanks for so much for spending time with us today. ISU, again, and a huge thing happening in our space community. I know they've gotten a lot of good support. We in the space community have been hearing about this and been talking about it for more than a year now. And I'm just so glad that you're all here and that these folks from around the world have a great chance to see what Florida Space Coast is all about. And to remind everyone, as Bob Cabana keeps saying, that we are still open for business.
Yes. Thank you very much for having me on your
appreciate
show.
Appreciate it, Gary. We'll be in touch here in the future as well. I really do appreciate it. Hey, next week on Space Talk, my guest will be former NASA engineer and best-selling author Homer Hickam, whose most famous book, Rocket Boys, was turned into the popular movie October Sky. He has recently published a new book called Crater, which is about a helium-3 mining colony on the moon. And will give us lots to talk about, given the recent developments about asteroid mining in the commercial space world. Also want to let you know that on July 1st, we will have some special guests in the studio to acknowledge the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy Space Center. On July 8th, we'll talk with former astronaut Tom Jones. And on July 15th, I'm proud, happy, and thrilled to announce that Kennedy Space Center Director Bob Cabana will return to the program for his second appearance on Space Talk. So there's certainly much to look forward to in the weeks ahead. Hey, in the meantime, don't forget that our inbox at spacetalking@AOL.com is always open. For one-stop shopping, you can just point your browser to WMMBAM.com, keyword Space Talk, where you can find a podcast of today's program, along with links to an archive of previous shows and our online version of Orbital Inclinations. That's it for now. Space Talk is a production of Mylas Solutions and is brought to you thanks to the generous help of our supporting sponsors, Space Florida, Boeing, Abacus Technology, SpaceX, United Launch Alliance, and Lockheed Martin. My thanks to Sean Williams for manning the ops station for today's program. Please join us next Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight for another live hour of Space Talk. Stay tuned now as WMMB presents a weekend edition of the Best of Bill Mick Live. I'm Jim Banky. We'll talk to you again Wednesday morning with the coverage of the Atlas V launch. And once again, happy Father's Day, Dad.